Hello, everybody.
I'm Phil Margavichus, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. For more information on Project MedTech and to sign up for our monthly newsletter, visit our website at www.projectmedtech.com and follow us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching Funding MedTech on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. Funding MedTech is an interview-style podcast focused on exploring ways to fund MedTech innovation and will be released weekly on Wednesdays. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Inalytics. Do you want to submit your software MVP to the FDA in 4 months? Perhaps you're looking for an FDA-savvy software development partner to write your software or to build your AI/ML algorithm from the ground up. Today's sponsor, Inalytics, can take your software idea, build it, clear it, deploy it, and maintain it. They can be your Sherpa to help you climb the FDA submission hurdle in as little as 4 months, and that includes the clinical performance study. What are you waiting for? Get on the market before your competition and go check out Inalytics.com. That's Inalytics.com. Or reach out to the founders, Yujan Shrestha or David Giese on LinkedIn. In this episode, Charles Allen at Myo1 and Dwayne Mancini discuss his background in the medtech industry, what Myo1 is working on, the medtech innovator program, focus on collecting clinical data for commercialization support, fundraising strategies to do advanced rounds, the Canadian medtech ecosystem, and so much more. Medical innovation starts with medical discussion.
Okay, Charlie, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, so Charlie, quick introduction into your background in the medtech space, but also if you weren't a part of the medtech space prior to this, and then what you're doing at Myo1.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, so I have an engineering background, and my background really comes from the basic science. So I've started working through mechanical engineering, and then I was doing a master's in bioelectrical engineering. And a lot of the work that I've done, it's my third startup now, all with sensor-based technologies, has been really focused on quantifying issues that might not otherwise have a good tool to go off of. This is my first foray, or at least the founding of Myo1 was the first medical device that I got a part of. And that has been really a big learning experience. So we founded the company in 2019 with a physician founder that I met when I was just starting out. And he was explaining to me this problem around managing patients with acute injuries and how we could use technology to make that management easier with labor shortages and all of that. Being able to quantify something that was usually being detected using a clinical exam was something that we thought it'd be a really interesting problem to try to solve.
Yeah, super cool. So I want to dive into Myo1 here. But before that, where did you do, where did you do your bachelor's at?
So I did my bachelor's in Queen's University in Ontario.
Okay.
Great school.
Yeah.
Lots of fun and a lot of memories there, and really got into the micro fabrication and seeing how you can do things with small sensors. During that time period, I was working on a glaucoma solution, and that was my first little touch point into medicine. Built a technology that is now going through the commercial lenses on that side. But I really got interested in sensors and what we could do with that.
Yeah.
So then I did a master's at McGill University, and that's where a lot of the sensor technology that I ended up helping found companies with came out of that work.
Okay. So that's what I was going to get to was, you had a mechanical engineering background, which you could have taken in any direction you really wanted to, but you chose to go into, for your master's program, something more on the biomed side. And so I was just curious, what caused that transition for you, but it sounds like you were already doing it during your bachelor's. So what year, or not what year, but I guess you said you met this physician founder in 2019. Was that while you were doing your master's degree, or was that?
No, so that was afterwards. So we worked on a few different sensor technologies in the lab when I was doing my master's. And during that time period and afterwards, so that was back in 2015 when I first started working on a lot of this technology. I met Dr. Harvey, who then basically in about 2017, 2018, explained to me what was going on with this problem. And we started working on a solution towards it. Founded Myo One in 2019.
Yeah. Charlie, I'd love to get your perspective on this. How much trust is in that initial process? Because a lot of clinicians, not just physicians, but a lot of clinicians in the healthcare system, you know, have problems with, you know, or there's issues in their workflow, but not all of those, the solution could really be like, not everyone faces that same problem. So you really can't form a company out of it. So for you as an engineer, like how much trust is with that physician to say, okay, like I can solve this. I could build you a solution to this, but I'm trusting you to make sure that this is a problem worth solving.
Mm-hmm. And you touched on a lot of points there. Like there's a known problem around this issue, some of the management of this, but in order to solve it properly and really push the science and the way we manage these diseases forward, it needs to make it needs to integrate really well in the clinical workflow and actually make it easier for the team to perform their tasks. And so that's a huge part of the learning that I had to go through when I was first getting introduced to this problem. Met with, luckily, you know, his background, he's the head of orthopedics or orthopedic trauma at the Montreal General. And so we've got really deep connections in that space. So he allowed us to go to the hospital, spend a lot of time with the residents, really get to understand how these issues are dealt with today, and then looking at how we could solve that in the future in terms of building a better tool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about what Myo One is doing. What is the problem you're solving? More specifically, what is your solution? And then, you know, just in terms of like a state of where you are, where are you currently at?
Yeah. So we founded the company in 2019 around the problem related to monitoring injuries in an acute setting. And the goal was to develop a technology that could help standardize workflow around objective data. So the issue we're solving is a problem called compartment syndrome, which today is monitored using clinical exam, a serial clinical exam. So it requires routine assessments and a skilled orthopedic resident, typically in a level one trauma center, to pick up on changing subjective clinical signs to be able to manage this problem effectively. The issue with that is being able to rely and have the team coordinate around that is very difficult. And so what we went to do is build something that allowed you to objectively monitor the data and really measure the disease as it was developing.
Okay, awesome. So tell me a little bit about, and maybe expand on what the current standard of care was before your product, and beyond just the effect to the patient, because you know, like a Project MedTech, when we work with any of our companies, we talk to them about, you know, hey, answering your value to the patient and the clinician is oftentimes like pretty straightforward, but why does the healthcare system care? Why do payers care? You know, those are two really big voices in the healthcare system and are arguably the most influential. And so curious on expanding upon that as well.
No, that's really, I mean, it's a good point. And actually one of the things that we focused on a lot more early on in the days was the value to the system and how using objective data and relying and having a care team. And really, that's one of the things that we discovered is that this issue is a full care team issue. So it's something that you know, an emergency will come in through the ER, and then they'll inform different parts of the hospital in order to reliably detect and treat this problem in a timely fashion. And if you can, as you can imagine, if you're using subjective data, it's a lot of hearsay that is being passed around. So it becomes a very noisy signal for the team to get to a solution fast enough. And so what that means is there's a lot of over-treatment that gets done and a lot of delayed treatment. So you're a lot more aggressive about treating these problems. And what that ends up doing is, and I don't know if you've ever seen what a fasciotomy is, but it's essentially a large open wound. You're trying to open up an area that's been creating a lot of pressure to relieve the pressure that's being built up. And so that leaves patients with lasting issues, a lot of time in the hospital, increased length of stay, increased complications, all that adds cost to the hospital stay. And so what we're able to do is objectively detect which patients require that procedure. And for the ones that are recovering well, get them out of the hospital in a timely fashion.
Yeah. And so tell me about the device then. What's the solution? Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, I've got a sensor background. So that's where, you know, we started. It was trying to figure out a sensor that can measure the swelling and measure the disease as it was developing. So we start with a single use connected sensor that is able to go in and be very easy to deploy. Because that was the other thing. There's a lot of areas that you learn as you go in terms of, but one of the big value drivers, making it easy and making it simple to deploy and making it integrated into the clinical workflow. And those are all big challenges that you need to overcome. So our product's a single-use sensor that goes into the muscle, kind of like the way you deploy an IV, after which there's a connected system that allows the data to get pulled up into the cloud and a mobile app that allows the physicians and the care team to look at the data as it's evolving. And so they can start to see which patients are improving and which patients are deteriorating and be able to act in a timely fashion.
Cool. And are you... Are you you started in 2019. Are you on the market yet? Also, I think it's crucial to mention too that you are a Canadian-based startup company, correct?
Yes. So we're a Canadian-based startup based out of Montreal, Canada. We've done a lot of work since 2019. Mm-hmm. So our product's approved in Canada, approved in the US, wow, approved in Europe. We're commercial stage. We're in about 60 hospitals across the US. As a small company, you have to focus in one area. And so we focused on the American market. We've got 14 patents, published literature showing our device has increased the accuracy of diagnosis and the speed to diagnosis. So accuracy up to 99.9% and speed by 5 hours, which can be the difference between coming out of the hospital, walking out of the hospital and not. And we're generating revenue. We had a very strong first year of revenue in 2023. We've expanded significantly in the last quarter. It looks like things are continuing to move in that direction.
Cool. So I want to go, I'm going to circle back to that, the commercial clinical piece in a minute here, but real quick, from a status of where you at from like fundraising, did you do non-dilutive capital? I'm sure you have some dilutive. And I think that, that when we first talked, the reason I knew your company name is because you won MedTech Innovator. Is that right?
We won prizes at the MedTech Innovator. We didn't win the full thing, but we did win a few of the prizes.
Yeah.
And that program is great. I can't say anything better than, you know, it's an awesome experience and very formative for someone that had very little background going into it. It helped me a lot from a networking perspective, but also just an introduction to some of the things you got to consider. And you touched on a lot of those points. I mean, the workflow is a big piece, but then reimbursement, being able to build a value economic case for the hospital system, and then the education relying to really get the product adopted clinically.
Yeah.
There's there's a lot of moving parts, but it's great. And from a funding perspective, we completed a Series A in March of last year of $12.5 million, and we're moving towards a capital raise right now to get to break even.
Awesome. Very cool. So on the fundraising side, you know, I'm curious on advice you might have for startup companies, like what to expect, your best recommendations, that sort of thing. And then part two of that question is, I don't know where you raised money from, but what is the Canadian ecosystem like from like a really early stage? You know, we've had a couple different Canadian venture capital groups on, like Amplitude Ventures, you know, but they're a pretty large one. And we've had a few others, but just curious on like that early stage capital as you're in that like ideation phase, you know, how is the funding there? Are there a lot of angel groups, VCs? Is there a lot of non-dilutive capital? What's that look like?
So I'd say it's expanding. So in like, let's say 2019, a lot of it was family offices, and it's a few small venture groups that were being developed that were focused on that seed Series A funding. But there was definitely a limited funding compared to the US. I spent a lot of time speaking with family offices to get the initial funding off the ground. And that's how we were able to get our first raise done. Moving forward, the ecosystem has expanded, and there's been a lot of interest in the med tech space in Canada and especially in Quebec. And so our government and some of the programs around here, we're starting to see more and more investment locally in terms of larger funds being developed, focused on that early commercial stage. That being said, our goal moving forward is to expand outside of the Quebec local ecosystem and really tap into a larger market. And that's what I'm working on now.
Yeah. So as you've kind of ventured out, you know, what are some of those things that you've learned that an entrepreneur in a similar phase might be listening in, you know, that's like about to start this journey? Because I'm sure, you know, as a CEO, you know this, right? You're always fundraising. So I'm sure you've been working on this and thinking about, and especially at the stage you're at, I think it becomes a little more strategic in terms of you're trying to find the right strategic partner to help get you to the next milestone. And so I'm just curious on like, what are some of those things you've learned so far?
Yeah, so it's really a relationship driven process. And so a lot of the groups that we're talking to today are groups that I had begun conversations with back in 2020. And, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, they've been able to follow us and follow that journey and be able to see their staying power. There's just a connection that gets developed and a trust piece, which is also very important, where you're able to develop that that relationship to allow the groups to feel confident, especially in an early stage founder, you know, someone that doesn't necessarily have a very long track record in the medical space, that piece around there. And also being able to surround yourself with the stronger and stronger people that have that track record, that that deep network is also part of the equation. And so as your story progresses and people get more confidence behind it, there's more momentum, and it's more real, you can attract more better and better resources around people that that can help you on that journey.
Yeah. You brought up team and people and relationships. So I have it written down. I'm going to get back to commercial. But while we're on that, you know, as an early stage entrepreneur, how did you look at building your team? And this is kind of like a twofold question, especially as like a service provider. You know, we think about this a lot, but you know, when you're an early stage startup, it's not like you just have, you know, a team of 100 that are only dedicated to your company. There's oftentimes full-time employees. You have some part-time employees. You have consultants that are helping you with reg, quality, finance, reimbursement, like all these other different aspects of it as well. Some of those might transition in. Some of their roles might transition to a full-time thing. Like, there's just a lot of moving parts. So how did you look at the importance of team building as you were scaling your company, and it became less about maybe you and your physician or your founding team, and now, you know, there's other people involved in it?
Yeah. We're lucky that a lot of people that were there in the initial ideation phase and our early employees, like employee number 1 through 5, are still with the company. Mm. And so there's a staying power to that, and a culture that gets developed that you can leverage to attract more people. And that's one of the things that is pretty special and important, and what I'm proud of in terms of the group that we've been able to build. As you go, there are a lot of learnings along the way in terms of bringing in senior leadership and how that, and as you grow, there's also structures that you need to build out. So there's tons of things that you learn as the company scales up, and there's some friction that gets developed that you need to manage through, which is all part of the experience of getting something from, you know, early stage ideation to commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other thing too, that you said kind of about the culture that like 1 to 5, you know, that's another interesting piece for me. You know, especially with Project MedTech, I've read a lot on creating a good culture and this and that. And I think people are trying to, you know, break it down in such an analytical fashion that for me, sometimes like culture is just something you kind of feel. You know what I mean? And that's like difficult for me as a scientist, because I want to have something like materialized and I'm like, no, this is exactly what it is. And we have that, but a lot of companies have principles and values and all these different things. But like, for me, the most important piece about culture is like the feel, the touchy feely piece of this is like, well, how do people feel about it though? It's great to have a bunch of words on a page and, you know, stuff like that. So, it's interesting you brought that up, because I think that is like a testament to, yeah, you must have good culture if those, you know, initial people are still there, and there's always going to be friction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the piece that I've learned so far is on this journey is communication is key, and transparency. And so, you know, nothing's perfect. And I think that also lines up well with when you talk to investors, that they don't feel like you're sugarcoating everything, that there are known unknowns and areas that, you know, we're working through as a group. But being able to have that open dialogue and being able to share, you know, things like the financial health of the company, or where the revenue numbers are going for, and you know, what the strengths and the misses are, and delays in projects and stuff like that, being able to have those candid conversations as a group. So we have like a Monday morning sync up meeting where the whole group is there, all the key leaders, and we're looking at a KPI dashboard of everything that we've decided on, and the numbers are all there. You know, we've tried to measure everything. Coming from an engineering background, I like to measure things. I feel like everything can be measured. Not always, but you can.
That's right.
And then you can tell a story around it, which adds the human emotional element to it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the one piece you said within there that we hear from almost all of our investors is, you know, don't lie about things. If you're honest about where the roadblocks can be, if you know where they're going to be, then just talk about that. Be open about it. Hey, you know, this could be a sticky point. And if it is, these are our different ways around that, right? That is better than saying, yeah, we got a clear path right to there. It's like, that's not reality. And investors aren't dumb, right? So, you know, I like what you said there. Circling back to the commercial piece. So you said you're in 60 plus hospitals here in the US. That's incredible, especially considering of when you commercialized. How much when you were starting, because I think that a lot of people get so excited about commercialization that they instantly think like, great, generating revenue, that's the number one priority. And while that is an important priority, the most important thing in my opinion, when you can get into humans, is collecting as much clinical data as possible to build your commercialization strategy bigger and better. And so I'm curious on like how you guys evaluated that and looked at that when you first kind of got into patients, got into hospitals. The revenue is great, but how important was it to, because you already mentioned a few statistics about shortening time to 5 hours, and you know, so those are things you had to be intentional about.
Exactly. And yes, we commercially launched a year ago, but we've been on the market since 2021, and we deliberately weren't very focused on commercial. We were working on clinical data collection. We had a multi-center prospective study in the US and in Canada. Both of them were running The Canadian one went and completed enrollment, and that's what a lot of the data came off of, as well as the American one as well that went through. So there was a data element to it that we didn't need to get to FDA clearance, but that we used to bolster our story when we went commercial.
Awesome. I like the explanation on the clinical. Going even a little bit further with that is, when you were thinking about was clinical data needed for you to achieve FDA approval or clearance? No, it was not. Okay. So when you were thinking about the endpoints you wanted to collect there, a lot of it was heavy on the probably, you know, marketing sales front. Was there also an aspect of like reimbursement tied into that as well?
So when you're bringing in new technology to market, or at least the way we had interpreted it, was we wanted to show, first of all, feasibility, that this technology deployed in a clinical setting worked well. And then from there, what was the clinical value that was being driven? And that's where we're at now. It's just showing that sensitivity and specificity will increase, which means that you're able to reduce length of stay, reduce cost of care to the patients, and get them out of the hospital in a timely fashion. And that's where we're at today. There was a thought around the economics, and we built an economic model that now is driving some of the reasons why we're able to get into larger hospital systems and be more efficient in terms of passing through. But the messaging is evolving as we get more and more clinical data and more feedback from the field of how to position ourselves the most effectively.
That's awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about the first few clients, first few hospital systems, not names necessarily, but I think what I'm trying to get at here is, like, you know, when at that phase, it's really important to, you know, make sure that they're using the product appropriately, right? That they do want to reach for it. You're starting to learn things about, you know, other clinical workflow things. So how important was it for your team to be on site there to support, right? Like, tell me about that process.
You know, it's paramount to be close to the product and close to the deployment. And initially, it's really a device sale that we were going through. So focusing with the attending surgeons, getting them bought in, then building out the users and really focusing on that aspect of the clinical workflow, how this will help the clinical workflow. There are challenges to that approach. But it does get you to revenue quicker, especially when they have to go through the back committees and all that. As we evolve, what we're migrating towards is more of a system level conversation. So, instead of going directly for the attending surgeons to begin with and getting them to buy in, we do work on them on the side, but our primary focus is on the network and the hospital system and talking more at a higher level of how this can help the system, get that system bought in, and then work efficiently through the system to deploy the solution across multiple care teams.
Yeah. Okay, Charlie. So transitioning to kind of your role, and this is more for those other aspiring entrepreneurs who are out there. You know, it is rare. Rare or less common for founding CEOs to, you know, carry the company from the ideation phase into commercialization. They might get them to, like, first in human and then maybe step away from commercial. But for you, you know, you're still the CEO of the company. So I'm curious on, like, how your position has evolved as you've gone and your team's grown, and maybe some of the struggles that you've had with that, because I imagine it's difficult, you know, as an engineer to be like, oh shoot, like I can't be the one doing this anymore, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think one of the things I didn't cover on my background is that I've been surrounded by entrepreneurs, and my mom and dad are both entrepreneurs. My mom sold the company when I was 4 or 5 years old to take full time care of me and the family. We're a very family oriented family, and you know, dinners every night. But the really focused business was a big core speaking portion of what we were doing at the dinner table. And so I've always been exposed to the business aspects. I figured engineering would be a good starting point to be able to build the tools to be able to do technology. But I that ultimately knew that there was going to be a transition. That being said, you know, at the beginning, you're doing everything. And I to the point where once we got through our first approvals and we were able to go first in man, our team was looking around and being like, oh, we're actually going to put this in a person. I was like, yes, that's what we've been developing. And so I said, you know what, to take that first step, I said, I'll be the first in man. And so I got Dr. Harvey to go. And initially we were going to do this in a closed setting and then reveal that happened. But when the word got out, the whole team was in the conference room there to witness the first in man.
Yeah,
it was quite an experience. But so anyway, so you start there, like you got to wear multiple hats, you got to make sacrifice, you got to take steps. And that's all part of the journey.
Yeah, no, interesting. So that's helpful to know that, you know, you were already pre-exposed to the entrepreneurial bug. What was the biggest shock for you once you got into this? Was it, you know, like how difficult commercialization would be, or how difficult raising capital would be, or I guess, you know, because everyone comes in with their other experiences. So some might be like, oh, fundraising, I had no idea it was gonna be that hard. Others are like, yeah, I knew it was gonna be that difficult, right? So just curious what yours was.
I mean, the whole thing is really difficult. There's no aspect of it that you can say is a walk in the park. Like there's lots of work and, you know, late nights and grinding and being able to communicate things. So you have to be comfortable in that uncomfortable aspect. And, you know, that's easier said than done. And when you're living it on a day-to-day basis, you know, keeping the energy up is a big part of it. But once you get through a few of those hurdles and get some wins, it's nice to be able to, you know, be able to see what you've done too. And, you know, it's fun to be able to get on these podcasts and look back at, you know, everything that's been accomplished in the time frame that we've done it in. It gives you energy to move forward.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a, my team will tell you this too. I'm like a huge analogy guy. I love different analogies, and, entrepreneurship, like a good, there's a ton of really good, analogies that I should take that back. There's a ton of really average analogies I have. One that I use quite frequently is when there's adversity, like there are so many times entrepreneurship is like doing like Brazilian jiu-jitsu with someone who's a black belt and you're doing it for the first time and they're just constantly making you tap out. Except in entrepreneurship, we never tap out. Like that's literally what happens, is you just get put in a really difficult situation and it's like, how long can you sit in that pain for until it may get better, right? Like that is it to a T.
100%. And there's a staying power that gets developed, and that's what investors also pick up on and see, like, you know, yeah, you're still doing this and, oh, you've made progress and you're gone through that, you know, mm-hmm. that black belt. Now you're moving on to the next guy. And, you know, that's you think, okay, regulatory approval is the big milestone. You know, you do that handshake, everyone's happy. That's mm-hmm. the end of the journey. It's like, no, that's just the beginning.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And it's been fun to learn through all of those different hurdles, and hopefully you can take that and be a little more efficient the next time you go through the journey, but I don't think it's ever easy.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome, Charlie. Well, listen, I don't have any other questions, but to wrap up, what is next for Myo One? And you know, in terms of like, yeah, what's the exciting things happening in 6 months and the exciting things you're going after in the next couple of years?
Yeah. So what's been fun about getting the product out in the market is that you're starting to see, and the way it's been such an easy device to deploy, it starts to find its own areas of opportunity within the hospital. And we're getting pulled into areas of the hospital that we weren't initially thinking about. And so what's fun is that, you know, there's an orthopedic story for the product. There's a vascular story for the product. There's even an ECMO related story for the product. And there's value in each one of these areas for the solution that we've provided. And so what's fun now, or where I'm excited about, is being able to develop those verticals. And really our goal is that our strategy has been land, expand, and then standardized. And what we're working on now is standardizing with the big names and the big groups to around using our technology to drive better outcomes in those different verticals.
That's awesome. So for everyone listening in, we'll have Charlie's LinkedIn in the show notes. We'll have Myo One's website in the show notes as well. And Charlie, hang on for 1 minute. We'll chat offline. But thanks so much for sharing your story, your insights, your lessons learned, your advice for our audience.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you need anything from us, you can contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. And for more information on Project MedTech, visit our website at www.projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.